Please be seated. The next case on the court's calendar this morning is Hoffman versus MMIC Insurance Incorporated. Before we begin arguments in the case, I'd like to make a record that earlier this morning, an issue was brought to the court's attention regarding whether one of the members of the panel knew someone who is related to one of the parties. Perhaps we don't know the specifics of that. What we do know is that our chief staff attorney, as we understand it, has consulted with counsel for each party regarding that issue. And based on that discussion, the panel has been told that there is no request for recusal of any member of this panel, and I'd like to just confirm that for the record before we go forward. So who is here on behalf of appellant?
That's me, Paul Swerdlund. I'm not aware of anything. This has never been discussed with me, and I'm not aware of any reason for recusal by any member of the court.
Did you not have conversations with Liz Kramer from the court?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't talk with my client or anybody about it. No one raised it to my attention.
All right. Are you making any requests for time to consult with your client or to consider any recusal motion in this case?
No.
Thank you. And who is here for respondent?
Good morning, Your Honor. Mark Malloy and Lindsay Stryker for MMIC. We have no objection. I assume it was not a member or an employee of MMIC who did this, and I was not aware of anything.
So you're not requesting any recusal or additional time to explore a request for recusal?
No, I'm not.
Thank you. Then we will go forward with arguments. Counsel for appellant, and please do state your name for the record just so we are clear on the recording who's speaking.
Thank you. My name is Paul Swerdlund. I represent the plaintiff in this action, Dr. James Hoffman, and his clinic. The original claims here against Dr. Hoffman arouse out of a complaint by a transgender woman against Dr. Hoffman and his practice, seeking damages for their failure to provide him with to provide her with requested breast augmentation. Instead of seeing Christina Ginther, Dr. Hoffman's office referred her to physicians that worked in that area of transgender breast augmentation surgery. And that's the sum and substance of the underlying complaint. At the consideration of that matter, Dr. Hoffman presented several witnesses to the underlying court testifying that this type of surgery was quite different than ordinary breast augmentation, and the only people with training and experience should perform this and were able to comply with the standard of care. Dr. Hoffman has performed cisgender breast augmentation procedure for 29 years. However, he has never performed a transgender breast augmentation, never observed such a procedure, nor has he received any training in such a procedure. In fact, Dr. Hoffman's mentor specifically instructed him that when he had a transgender patient that wanted breast augmentation, to refer that patient to a specialist. And that's what he and his office did in this case. Well, then, because of that, Christina Ginther brought a lawsuit against Dr. Hoffman, and while Dr. Hoffman eventually won that suit, that has damaged him severely with respect to the attorney's fees and such, and we believe that should be covered by MMIC. MMIC did not, and now Dr. Hoffman is pursuing this case against MMIC. MMIC is not merely medical malpractice insurance. It advertises itself as operating as a medical liability insurance policy. And while this case did not allege medical malpractice, it does allege liability on the part of Dr. Hoffman and his clinic, and therefore should be covered. The insurance company takes the position that since the complaint alleges sexual discrimination, that it does not need to cover this. And I think that's far too simplistic an approach. It is our position that because the underlying complainant complained that she was not provided with this medical procedure that should have been provided to her by Dr. Hoffman, that this falls well within the policies offered by MMIC.
The policy. Why wasn't she provided with the procedure?
Well, Dr. Hoffman's never done this procedure. and he's never been trained.
What was, in terms of the underlying claim, which you're seeking to hold the insurance company accountable for in terms of defense, what was the underlying claim against the doctor as far as the reason for not providing the procedure?
It was framed in terms of sexual discrimination, saying that he discriminated against her because of her gender and didn't perform the surgery. The facts didn't...
So aren't we bound by that framing when we consider whether or not there should have been coverage or whether or not an exclusion should apply?
No, I don't think that's true at all. Minnesota case law has always held that an insurance company, in looking at a claim, can take a look at the initial complaints that it's sought to be covered, but it must go beyond that. You have to look at the underlying facts. What was the situation here? And had they done this, they would have realized this is a complaint against Dr. Hoffman for, not for sex discrimination, it was for a medical decision made by him in his office that he does not do these types of surgeries as a medical matter. And this is important to a lot of people. The amicus brief pointed
out. Are you saying that that would be medical malpractice, a surgeon saying, I don't do this type of surgery, therefore I'm not going to do it for you?
No, we're not saying it's medical malpractice. We're saying it's a medical incident. And the way a medical incident is described in this policy does fall well with in that. Because
let's assume, just for the purpose of our discussion this morning, as the district court apparently did, that it's a medical incident. What about the application or potential application of exclusions for intentional conduct that's discriminatory or violates a statute?
The policy itself states that a violation of law or criminal knowingly wrongful act would bar coverage for the allegations.
Isn't that what was alleged in the complaint against the doctor, that he violated the Minnesota Human Rights Act by refusing to provide a medical procedure, allegedly because he was discriminating against the proposed patient based on gender identity?
That was the allegation. But again, this is a medical decision by Dr. Hoffman's and his office.
It seems to me, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I'm looking at this saying, and it seems to me that the underlying complaint against the doctor was based on an allegation of discrimination under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which would be a violation of statute. And the doctor's defense to that allegation was, this wasn't discrimination, this was a medical decision. Does the fact that the defense sounds in medical decision-making override the fact that the actual claim was not that, oh, you made a bad medical decision? The actual claim was you discriminated against me because of gender identity, which is a violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
Yeah, no. I mean, we'll take a look at the exclusion. The exclusion here says this insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of a criminal, willful, malicious, fraudulent, dishonest, or knowingly wrongful act committed by or with the knowledge of the insured. There's plenty of case law saying that when a phrase states that in the policy, you have to use that exclusion, you have to find knowledge on the part of the insured or a wrongful act committed by the insured. And that's what the court didn't do here. The court used this arising out of clause to say, in this case, we don't have to go that far. We're just going to say, well, since this complaint arises out of a criminal or wrongful act, we're going to forget about that last phrase of this exclusion, which says it must arise out of a knowingly wrongful act committed by the insured or with the knowledge of the insured. And because these facts don't support that exclusion, the insurance should have been provided to Dr. Hoffman by MMIC. What MMIC wants to do here is really reword that. They don't want it to apply to any claim arising out of a criminal, willful, et cetera, knowingly wrongful act committed by or with the knowledge of the insured. They want it to refer to allegations of criminal or knowingly wrongful act committed by the insured. And the policy doesn't say that. The policy just omits that part about allegations. The policy refers to claims that arise out of a criminal, wrongful, malicious, fraudulent, or dishonest act.
But and counsel, aren't claims by their nature allegations? I mean, when you're filing a complaint, you're making claims, and these claims are generally allegations of wrongdoing, and then you go through the legal process to determine whether or not wrongdoing has happened. So isn't the word claims by the very nature allegations, and as such, wouldn't that support the respondent's reading or the court's reading of the statute or the of the policy?
No, when you take a look at the policy itself.
But counsel, the policy itself, and you've read it, it says this insurance does not apply to any claim. So let's start with the word claim. I think you're arguing that the mere allegations of wrongdoing, in essence, don't rise to a level of claim. You have to actually look underneath those mere allegations.
Yes.
I'm presuming that the respondent is arguing that the claim is the allegations made in the underlying case. So the question really is, what does claim mean? And isn't a claim, by the nature of what it is, isn't the definition, it's an allegation. And if so, wouldn't that support respondents in the court's reading? And if not, why isn't a claim akin to an allegation?
We have to look at all these clauses together. Section 4A of the underlying MMIC insurance policy provides that a claim means a demand for money or services resulting from a medical incident. This was a claim or demand for money for services arising out of a medical incident. So you go to a paragraph J of the policy, and that says a medical incident means an adverse or unanticipated outcome resulting from professional services that were or should have been provided by an insured or by a person for whom the insured is liable. In this case, the professional services were rendered by Dr. Hoffman's office when it referred Ginther elsewhere.
So those professional services were the referral of Ms. Ginther to another provider because the lack of experience by Dr. Hoffman in performing those types of surgeries is what you're saying.
Correct. Okay.
But that wasn't the basis for the lawsuit against the doctor.
Well, it was. She posed it in terms of a discrimination case.
Okay. I've read the complaint. Where in the complaint against the doctor does it say anything about, well, the doctor erred in referring me, didn't make an appropriate referral, referred me to the wrong person? The sole argument in the complaint is the doctor discriminated against me under the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
I know the complainant posed that. But Minnesota law does not require us to rely only on the complaint. Minnesota case law states that while an insurer can initially deny a defense based on allegations in a complaint, it also provides that an insurer may not stand by its denial when it learns of facts indicating a claim against the insured arguably falls within coverage. And we're saying here, the allegation of this as a sex discrimination complaint was really a ruse. It was really allegation of improper referral by Dr. Hoffman, and she's seeking damages for that.
How was it an allegation of improper referral for anything other than discrimination? What's the information that supports what you just said? What's the evidence that the plaintiff in suing the doctor really wasn't claiming discrimination? She was claiming improper medical advice.
Well, she didn't pose it in that way.
But I understand she didn't pose it that way, but you're saying the way she posed it was a ruse for what was really going on, which was she was suing him for bad medical advice. What evidence is there that she was suing for bad medical advice?
Well, I'm not saying, we don't have to show that she sued him for bad medical advice. We're saying that this advice she gave was discriminatory towards her, and that was a medical incident.
Okay, and so I want to just say, okay, let's all say it's a medical incident. We need to talk about the exclusion. Why doesn't the exclusion for intentional wrongful conduct, i.e., an alleged violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act, fall within that exclusion? And what I hear you saying is it's just an allegation. If you really look at the allegation, it fails, and there was no finding that there was discrimination under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Is that what the argument is?
I think that's a fair way to put it, yes.
Okay. So do we have case law that says before an insurance company can rely on an exclusion to deny coverage, it must prove that there was, in fact, wrongful intentional conduct?
I think that's what the exclusion itself says. Again, we take a look at this exclusion. It said that the insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of a criminal, willful, malicious, fraudulent, dishonest, or knowingly wrongful act committed by or with the knowledge of the insured. And neither of these last two allegations hold up. There's absolutely no allegation that
they want to read the word an allegation or alleged into that exclusion.
Correct.
So if we were to accept your reading, then we'd have a situation where you couldn't apply the exclusion on the front end. The insurer would have to defend the case, and then only at the end of the case, when the merits of the underlying claim had been determined, could the insurer determine whether or not the exclusion applied.
If it goes that far, yes.
Okay, so then at that point, if it was determined that the exclusion applied, then what, the insurance company sues the doctor to recoup its defense costs?
It could do under a reservation of rights like that. It happens all the time. So I see my time's up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record before you get started.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Malloy from the law firm of Meissner, Tierney, Fisher & Nichols in Milwaukee, and I represent the respondent, MMIC Insurance, in this case. I want to start at the very basics here. What does the MMIC policy cover, and what is the analysis that we undertake to determine whether we have a covered claim? Counsel indicated that we advertise that we are provide medical professional, comprehensive medical professional liability policy. Dr. Hoffman's policy had one coverage. It was medical professional liability coverage. Our initial coverage grant is triggered under that policy. So there's no general liability coverage. There's no any, the only relevant is professional liability coverage, otherwise commonly known as medical malpractice coverage. Our initial coverage grant is triggered by a claim, as Judge Harris indicated, a demand for money or services. In this case, there was simply a demand for money by Ms. Ginther that results from care or treatment provided to a patient, in this case, Ms. Ginther, a medical opinion rendered by the insured, in this case, Dr. Hoffman, or decisions that require specialized skill, training, or judgment of a healthcare professional, in this case, Dr. Hoffman. That's the first thing we need to look at to determine whether there is an initial grant. If there is no initial grant, then there's no coverage. But even if there is an initial grant, then we move on to the exclusions and determine, is there something in the exclusions that pulls it from the initial grant? Does the claim, again, the demand for money, does it involve conduct that falls within one of these exclusions? And if it does, then there is no coverage. That's how you determine if there is coverage. And we're here determining the issue is duty to defend. Duty to defend follows that very same analysis, but the difference is the duty to defend is broader. So what you're trying to determine, is there any possibility that MMIC would ever have coverage, would ever have a duty to indemnify for the claim, the demand for money here? In this case, there was no possibility that MMIC was going to have a duty to indemnify Dr. Hoffman to pay the money that Ms. Ginther was seeking from him based on the two causes of action that were asserted by Ms. Ginther. I'll talk about the exclusions for a second. They're very important because that's what Judge Wall ultimately found on. But I think it makes a little bit more sense from a coverage standpoint to start with the initial grant of coverage analysis, to start with the, is this a medical incident? The question is, was Ms. Ginther's claim, again, her demand for money in this case, was it the result of medical treatment rendered by Dr. Hoffman, a medical opinion offered by Dr. Hoffman, or decisions that required specialized skill, training, and judgment of Dr. Hoffman? And to those questions, there are certain facts that no one disputes. Dr. Hoffman never saw Ms. Ginther, never spoke with her, never took a history from her, never examined her, never talked about treatment options, never generated a medical record from her. The only contact Ms. Ginther had with Dr. Hoffman's office was a phone call and an email to his office manager, who happened to be Dr. Hoffman's wife. That's number one.
May I ask you, would your analysis change, would the outcome change, if no one had followed up and seen that she was transsexual, and instead came in for the appointment, discuss, and then it's like, this is outside of my expertise, I'm going to refer you to the University of Minnesota?
Ultimately, I don't think my analysis would change. If the question I would have would be, what is this claim for negligent referral? The ultimate analysis wouldn't change because the exclusions are still driven by what are the causes of action, and the cause of action here were for discrimination. When Ms. Ginther sued him, she sought money for two different causes of action: violation of MnSTAT 363A-17, refusal to do business on the basis of sexual orientation, and violation of MnSTAT 63A-44, discrimination in the enjoyment of a public accommodation. That's it. Those were the only claims that she ever made. And in a nutshell, what she was saying, the reason she was seeking money from Dr. Hoffman was he discriminated against me on the basis of my sexual orientation, he refused to provide professional service to her, and in doing so, he violated the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So no, it wouldn't necessarily change my analysis. This idea that Dr. Hoffman's experts testify that he had a legitimate basis to refuse those services and that he actually had a duty to send her somewhere else, and let's be honest why those experts were being offered. The reason those experts were being offered was not because of a claim that he violated the standard of care. It was not because it was a medical malpractice case. And when the case was dismissed, the court even said, this is not a medical malpractice. The reason those experts were offered was to show that his actions were not discriminatory and had a legitimate basis. That's a defense to a discrimination claim, right? So the idea that this somehow transformed the claim from discrimination to medical negligence is not supported, and it actually violates the duty to defend, black letter of duty to defend law. Yes, you can look at outside the complaint at extrinsic evidence. We've never disputed that. It's in every one of our briefs from the day we started briefing on this case in district court. But what you cannot do is expand the claims that are asserted in the complaint. You're limited to the causes of action asserted in the complaint. So when MMIC is figuring out whether it has a duty to defend, they're limited to those two causes of action. And that makes sense, right? When an insurer is looking at, do I have a duty to defend, they can't predict what kind of defense is going to be made. They can't predict. And if this claim was amended and a negligent referral claim was made, then what happens? That amended complaint gets sent to us and we analyze again, do we have a duty to defend? That never happened in this case. The only claims that were ever made were two claims for discrimination, which were intentional conduct, required intentional conduct, and constituted a violation of Minnesota statute. The amicus brief referenced in this a jury instruction that, as I was preparing, I went through yesterday. They referenced the jury instruction CIVJIG 80.19. And I encourage the court to look at that instruction because it says this. It says, duty of a doctor to refer. A physician has a duty to refer a patient to a specialist if the physician discovers or should discover that a patient's condition is beyond his or her ability to skill or skill to treat with reasonable success. The second paragraph said, if a physician does not refer a patient to a specialist, he or she is held to the same standard of care that a specialist in that field would use under similar circumstances. And then if you look at the comments below, it says, proof that a physician failed to refer a patient to a specialist does not in and of itself establish negligence. A plaintiff must prove his or her injury was directly caused by the failure to refer. If we're going to talk about a quote-unquote negligent referral claim in Minnesota, that's it. It applies to when a physician should refer a patient to a specialist but doesn't. That's the Larson case here. There's no Minnesota court that has adopted a claim against a physician for making a referral to a specialist. And even if there was, that claim would have to be supported by the plaintiff claiming that she was injured by the treatment to which she was referred. That's not at all what Ms. Ginther was claiming here. We don't even have evidence in the record here that she took Dr. Hoffman's wife's advice and went to the U of M. We certainly don't have any evidence to suggest that there was treatment at the U of M that injured her. And last, we don't even have Dr. Hoffman making the referral here. As I said before, he doesn't even take a history, do an evaluation, use his skill or training to say, you should go see a specialist. We have his office manager telling a prospective patient that, hey, I think the U of M is where you want to go. That's like if someone called my office and asked my legal assistant to, can Mark do a will for me? And she says, Mark's never done a will, but Attorney Smith down the street does. Could that form a basis for a professional negligence claim against me later? Of course not. There's no Minnesota court that allows that type of a negligent referral claim. There's no jurisdiction in the country that allows that type of negligent referral claim that they are claiming this actually was. And I'm pretty sure no one who filed a brief in this case, whether it be MMIC, whether it be Dr. Hoffman, or whether it be the American Medical Association, wants to create that new cause of action. This is a discrimination claim. It's not a negligent referral claim. They're saying MMIC should have converted it into a claim for negligent referral to find a duty to defend, and that argument just isn't supported. I want to briefly touch on these exclusions because I do think they were important, as Judge Larkin pointed out, because that's what Judge Wall decided this case. And again, there's no dispute here. The two cause of action alleged required intentional conduct, and they required a violation of the MHRA. The exclusions here are unambiguous. And I want to focus on the violation of law exclusion because that was not something that was focused on by counsel. This insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of violation of any local, state, or federal statute, rule, or regulation. The second exclusion that's applicable is criminal and knowingly wrongful acts. That's a separate exclusion. It says this insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of willful or knowingly wrongful acts committed by or with the knowledge of the insured. Really, we don't really need to go beyond the violation of law exclusion, in my opinion. Ms. Ginther's complaint specifically alleges a violation of Minnesota statute, the MHRA. That's all she alleges in either of her causes of action. And the exclusion is right on point. This insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of violation of state statute. There was no other claim. At page 22 of their brief, Dr. Hoffman paraphrases these exclusions, and he says, this insurance policy reasonably read seeks to exclude doctors who are bad actors and who have acted wrongfully. That's what Ms. Ginther was alleging here. Look at her complaint. Dr. Hoffman's refusal to do business with transgender persons violated the MHRA. Look at her online review. It is unfortunately very clear that Dr. Jim Hoffman was committing medical discrimination in order to uphold transphobic beliefs. Dr. Hoffman ultimately proved that that was not true. But that was her claim. That doesn't change the fact that that was her claim. That's why she was seeking money from him. MMIC's policy doesn't cover that claim, and Dr. Hoffman essentially admits that at page 22 of his brief. The last thing I want to address is this argument that the exclusions only apply if he is actually shown to have discriminated against her. There's a lot of reasons why that can't be, and I believe Judge Larkin, you pointed out one, and that is it would create a scenario where the insurer has to defend these cases to the end before it can even raise a coverage issue. But there's a bigger issue here. This can't possibly be the case because it violates a black letter principle of duty to defend. If there is no possibility of the duty to indemnify, there is no duty to defend. That's Timmer and Earth Soils. If a complaint alleges several claims and any one of them requires a duty to indemnify, there's a duty to defend. Put another way, if the claims don't allege anything, any claim that would create a duty to indemnify, there is no duty to defend. There were two possibilities here.
What about the costs of the defense?
The duty to defend would only be triggered if there was a duty to indemnify here. So that the cost of the defense is not a part of the damage or the duty to indemnify. It would be the legal part of the legal expenses that coincide with the duty to defend. So there were two possibilities here. Ms. Ginther proves Dr. Hoffman's actions were intentionally discriminatory in violation of Minnesota statute, or she doesn't, right? So in the first instance, Ms. Ginther wins the case. She's awarded money for damages, and MMIC has no duty to indemnify because it's been proven that there was a violation of statute. In the second instance, MMIC has no duty to indemnify because there are no damages here. Under either of those two possible results of this lawsuit, the only two possible results of this lawsuit, MMIC does not have a duty to indemnify. Therefore, we have no duty to defend. We'd ask that you uphold Judge Wall's decision. I'm happy to answer any questions.
No? All right. Thank you very much.
The insurance company is still contending that they're only liable for the causes of action alleged in the complaint. I think as we've pointed out throughout our briefing here, that allegation is certainly simply not true. You have to take a look at what the facts arise to after you've had a chance to take a look at this, and if at any time it appears that these allegations are covered by the insurance policy, that the insurance company must defend. If they wait until the end, we're in a situation such as we have here, whereas we should be, we won the underlying case. My client has been stuck with a tremendous amount of attorney's fees and other problems, and the insurance company should be liable. That's what we're asking for in this case. And the assertion that they're only liable for claims made under the complaint is simply not true. They have to look beyond that and see where we're going here.
But those cases that talk about looking beyond, do they talk about looking beyond to, you know, additional evidence that's come to light? Or are they talking about what you seem to be suggesting, which is a different claim altogether? I mean, there is case law that says, you know, you can't say, well, because this or that claim could have been brought, therefore there's coverage if, in fact, the claim wasn't brought.
Well, it would be our understanding that they are liable for this claim over medical decisions made by Dr. Hoffman and his office to refer Christina Ginther to another healthcare provider, and this is clearly covered under the policy, and they should be liable for not making payment under this. We're not alleging necessarily a negligent referral here. We're alleging a referral that complied with Dr. Hoffman's medical duties, his ethical obligations, to refer this patient to someone else other than him.
And I don't think anybody here is saying that. I don't hear opposing counsel disagreeing with that. What I hear opposing counsel saying is The claim that was brought against the doctor was that he discriminated unlawfully in violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act based on sexual identity. And his defense is, no, I didn't. I referred her to someone else because I don't have the skills necessary to do this particular surgery. So then the issue becomes, what governs our determination of whether or not the exclusion applies? The claim that was actually brought or the defense that was made? I mean, I think the argument I hear you making is, well, it doesn't matter that she claimed a Minnesota Human Rights Act violation. There wasn't a violation. This was a sound medical referral. Does the fact that your defense sounds in medical decision-making change the claim that was pleaded?
Well, I think when you analyze the insurance company's liability, yes. We're not looking just at the words of the complaint. We're looking at the overall structure, overall facts. What is she really suing about? She's really suing about a decision by Dr. Hoffman's office to refer her elsewhere. And that's something that's clearly covered under the terms of the policy. And
unless it's a decision to refer her elsewhere for an intentionally wrong reason, which is what she alleged.
That's what she alleged, but we know that was not the case. Keep in mind, what does that exclusion say? It says this insurance does not apply to any claim arising out of a criminal, willful, et cetera, knowingly wrongful act committed by or with the knowledge of the insured. And here, MMIC cannot say that Dr. Hoffman committed a wrongful act or that it was a wrongful act committed by his office with his knowledge. And as the amicus briefs point out, failure to cover doctors for a medical incident like this has far-reaching effects and could show a number of doctors basically exposed to these types of claims and damages. And I think that would be a serious mistake here by this court to allow the matter to proceed in that way.
Well, wouldn't a solution also be to change or demand a change in the language and standard policies to address the fact that, you know, the Minnesota Human Rights Act has changed in terms of the protections it grants, and there's going to be overlap in different areas, and one way to deal with that is to change policy language to cover situations like this?
I think the way this policy was written, it clearly covers Dr. Hoffman for the allegations of that underlying complaint combined with the facts as developed. So I would ask this court to uphold that and allow Dr. Hoffman to proceed in his claims against MMIC.
Thank you for the arguments in briefing. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.